This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Hello everyone, you're on Joy 94.9, it's Sunday Arts Magazine with Daniel White and me, David Hunt. Hello Daniel.
Hi David, it's so good to have you back in the studio.
Right, yes, because you filled in all by yourself last week.
I did, I had the studio to myself. You were off travelling across the country.
Oh, I went to Adelaide for the weekend.
Adelaide, okay. It's, I think, the one city or major city in Australia that I actually haven't been to.
Oh, well, talking about the arts, there after Melbourne, well, I think even ahead of Melbourne, the arts in Melbourne play a huge part. Their Adelaide Arts Festival, which is on in March every year, is about the second biggest arts festival in the world.
Oh, really?
And then the Fringe Festival, which we're doing a special on, our festival here in Melbourne, sure. Fringe Festival, their Fringe Festival is huge. It's only second to the Edinburgh Festival. That's how big that is. Then they do the Cabaret Festival mid-year, which is an amazing cabaret festival where people come from all over the world to perform and to go to it as well. So Adelaide's pretty damn good on the arts. So.
I know that Adelaide's made a name for itself with churches, but that's about it. That's all I hear about Adelaide. So good to hear that their art scene is developed, I suppose.
And during their arts festival, the Age here in Melbourne do a daily reviews of different shows. They have reporters over there and they review it here because so many people. I went to one of the openings. Marconi played with a 100-piece orchestra and chorus on the banks of the River Torrens. It was amazing. Wow. And the plane was full of Melburnians heading off to Adelaide for that opening night. That's how big it was.
Well, of course, we've got the Melbourne Fringe Festival coming up now.
We have, yes.
So it's a very big time for the Melbourne independent art scene.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
We're going to devote the next hour to that.
Uh-huh. Well, not quite a whole hour because Brendan's away and you're filling in for the next 4 weeks while Brendan's away.
That's right.
But then you're going to become part of our team, which is wonderful because you're a newbie from Taste of Radio, is that right?
I am. Taste of Radio is a fantastic program which gives people like myself a chance to learn the ropes, learn how to panel, learn how to present, and then go on to join teams like yours. So I recommend anyone who wants to do something like Taste, take a look at the Joy website. There's information about it there.
Yeah.
But it's a really good program.
And you don't have to want to be a presenter. Just to know how radio works. I know a lot of people who have done it and never wanted to be on air.
Oh, sure. It's a fascinating industry.
Yeah. You can do podcasting or become a producer of a show. So you don't have to actually be on air once you've done it.
Oh, and there are other ways to volunteer with Joy aside from even producing or working with a program. You can, we have lovely volunteers working at the front desk.
But they necessarily don't have to do Taste of Radio. So it's more on this side of it for that. So anyway, you're filling in for Brendan and you're a bit of a film buff as well, I hear.
I am. So look, there's been a few films come out recently. I think it's probably a bit of a slow time of year for film. There's not terribly much exciting coming out, but there was a film which came out just last week that I was really looking forward to, which is the biopic of James Dean. It's called Life.
Right.
And I know you have some feelings about James Dean.
Well, yeah, because he became a legend, like Munro. Sure.
Very quickly.
Very quickly. Yeah. His career, did you know much about him beforehand?
I know a little bit about him. I am a fan of some of his work, not all of it.
Yep.
I thought East of Eden was... I didn't love East of Eden. I like Rebel Without a Cause.
Yep.
I really like that film.
Right. Yeah, well, that's the one that he became very famous for and giant as well.
Yeah.
So, but I think he's one of the, because he died at a very young age, killed in a car accident, is that the legend is bigger than what the person actually is, and the body of work wasn't all that huge.
No.
And it becomes legendary. And that shot of him walking down the middle of the street with that overcoat on is legendary.
It's so funny you say that, because that's precisely what this film is about. Ah. This film is about the encounter between James Dean and the photographer Dennis Stokes, I believe his name is, who shot that Life series.
Okay.
And it's about the relationship between them.
Yeah.
So I went into it quite hopeful, and I was disappointed. So, look, I dragged some friends along to see this with me, and they could have, thrown me under a truck after we saw it. Look, it was slow. It's directed by Anton Corbin, who I don't know if you saw Control a few years back about the life of Ian Curtis and a Most Wanted Man more recently. This is a director who has made a name for himself developing real mood pieces. And of course, the point of a mood piece is to kind of give us an insight into the inner world of oftentimes the main character.
Yeah.
And this film just didn't do that.
Oh,
it was
really?
Slow. It was a slow-paced film. And I think we were, Corbin was trying to give us some insight into the kind of brooding character of James Dean. And he was quite an ambivalent character in many ways, in terms of his relation with authority and his ideas about his career. But, I think the film just missed the mark.
Right, okay. Because all of a sudden when you said it's about the photographer that took that shot,
yes,
that legendary shot, like the Munro one with her standing over that grid when the dress blows up,
yes,
I thought, wow, then it could be quite interesting little tale about the two of them working together.
You would
together.
Think so. Mm. But as I said, I think the kind of, character development that you'd like to see in a story like that is really second to the mood that the film tries to evoke.
Yeah.
Look, Dane DeHaan, I don't know if you're familiar with Dane DeHaan. He plays James Dean, and he's a good actor. He's a solid actor. I like his other work.
And the other guy is?
Robert Pattinson, who you may know from Twilight.
Yeah.
And actually, I saw a review a few days ago for this film that said Dane DeHaan has two things to do. One, inhabit James Dean, and the other, fight off Robert Pattinson for screen time, I found quite interesting. I don't think much of Robert Pattinson as an actor, but I do like Dane DeHaan. Unfortunately, he didn't really look like James Dean.
Right, okay.
Some of the mannerisms were there, but James Franco, I think, played James Dean a few years back, and I think
He would have done a brilliant job.
The other big film out right now is it's not big, it's a little film actually. But
hold on, how many stars would you give it out of 5?
Look,
come on, truthful.
Truthful, 1.5.
Ooh.
Okay,
I'm
a harsh marker, but I struggled through that movie.
Okay.
I struggled.
Yeah.
But I do like Dane DeHaan, and I think he's a talented actor.
Right.
This film missed it.
Yeah. So. Okay. There you go. And
all right,
the other film.
The other film.
Yes.
Me and Earl and the Dying Girl.
Yes.
Now, this film...
It's a teen movie, is
it? Well, it's about a teenager struggling at high school, and a friend of his develops leukemia, and about how he navigates that. That's what the film is about.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a film about teenage angst, but, I think it's part of this broader trend that we're seeing in Hollywood now, where films kind of engage with teenage angst, but do it in a very sardonic, ironic, kind of flippant and irreverent way. I don't know if you saw Perks of Being a Wallflower or Juno.
Oh, Juno, of course, couple of times.
Well, but Juno was very facetious, very witty kind of film, and this film kind of occupies that same space. So it is a really easy to watch, pleasant film, but it's also got a lot of heart. It's a really nice film, and I recommend it.
Right.
I do recommend you go and see it. If you like, you know what? It's funny because the reviews of this film said that it's an instant classic, and I kind of agree because of the kind of feel to it, but it only made $6 million at the box office in America domestically.
Oh.
And
that would be a flop then, wouldn't it?
Well, depends how you define flop, but it did make $2 million under its budget.
Right.
Under what they spent on it. So yes, financially, it wasn't profitable.
Do you know films like that, though, become cult classics?
They do.
And Gino is another one. I'm sure it wasn't all that big first run, and it would have been word of mouth, and then when people started to downloaded or buy it on DVD, that's when it really had its big impact.
Yeah, I don't know that's much consolation to its producers. Right. I mean, look at something like The Fault in Our Stars, which came out similar time last year, similar subject matter. It made something like $130 million in the first 6 weeks. So yeah. $6 million, there's a big difference.
Yeah, well, I'm surprised there because I've seen a few reviews on it on cable from American shows. So I just assumed that it was going to be a fairly big one.
Me and Earl and the Dying Girl.
Yeah.
Oh, and it should be. It's a great film. Yeah. I'm going to give it 4 stars.
4 stars. Yeah. Wow. Now, there's a piece of music from it.
There is. Now, you're more familiar with this song than I am. I heard it in the film and I thought, I have to add that to my playlist.
Right.
This is Harry Nilsson, Everybody's Talking. And, I really enjoy the song. But of course, it's been around for a long time.
Harry Nilsson is dead now and died a long, long time ago. But yes, as you said, it's from Midnight Cowboy.
Dustin Hoffman, John
Boyd.
Yeah,
and yep. Which was a huge film in its day. And this song was a very big hit. And Harry Nilsson went on, there was talk at one stage that he was going to be the fifth Beatle, and he hung out with John Lennon all the time. They were drinking buddies and got into a lot of trouble. In the end, he actually, because he would never perform live, that was Harry Nilsson's problem. And he did some amazing albums over the years. And Living Without You was his other really huge hit. But he died penniless and died here in Australia up on Gold Coast way somewhere, just bumming around.
Tragic.
Really quite tragic. And but there were a lot of royalties then that he wasn't aware of, but he was just bumming around. Really interesting. So in the way, this Everybody's Talking from Midnight Cowboy with a very tragic end, but here it is reborn again in this new film.
Yeah, well, and I think because it has that, this is quite an intertextual film as well. Lots of reference to lots of other films, so, maybe that's why.
That's probably why. Okay, let's have a listen to it. It's such a classic. Everybody's Talking by Harry Nilsson. You're on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
You're on Joy 94.9 and it's Sunday Arts Magazine.
Yes. Yes.
It is. If you have anything to add to our conversation today, feel free to get in touch with us.
Now, as I was saying before, Daniel, today's show is all about Melbourne Fringe Festival, and we have the creative director and CEO. How important can you be? And we're talking about Simon Abrahams. Hello and welcome.
Hello. Thank you so much.
Now, a big, big month coming up for you guys.
Oh, yeah. One way to put it.
One way to put it. Now, before we talk about the festival and the importance of it to Melbourne, who are you?
Who am I?
Yes.
You want to talk about me, my favourite topic of conversation? Sure. Well, I have in fact just started at Melbourne Fringe, so I've been here only since May. So
right, which
it's a very new gig for me.
Which we won't go into it because it's been a little bit controversial. The person left on the eve of this festival.
She did look not controversially at all.
I'm going to make it.
You can try and make a story, but there's not a very juicy one at all. No, left on fantastic terms, off to a new gig, and in comes me.
Now, so you didn't have anything to do with this festival, so you're just running it to make sure the wheels don't fall off along the way. Is that right?
Well, that's right. Well, I'm doing two things, I guess. So I'm absolutely implementing, rolling it out. I was very lucky to have some say in the curation of our hub space and the club right in North Melbourne. So right. I did get to get a bit of my hand in there. And then meanwhile, I'm absolutely kind of planning and dreaming and working on big things for next year and beyond.
But you have quite a history in the arts, don't you? So there's a lot that you can bring to your new role.
I hope so. Yeah. Look, I've worked my whole life in the arts.
Tell us.
I came prior to Melbourne Fringe. I was head of programming at the Wheeler Centre, kind of putting together a lot of ideas, kind of conversations there, books, writing and ideas.
What a wonderful organisation.
It's an incredible space. And just being able to kind of dedicate ourselves, to, I guess, the idea of furthering public conversation and public thought, so I had a wonderful time there. I was at the Arts Centre before that, commissioning a bunch of new work, and I spent a long time working in children's theatre at a company called Polyglot, kind of fantastically are part of Melbourne Fringe this year. So it's like we've come sort of full circle.
I know that Wheeler Centre puts a lot of energy into kind of discovering new voices and giving space to writers who haven't had space before. Is that kind of ethos ethos that you're going to bring to your new role.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, that's probably why it was such a good fit. Is, you know, that is a huge part of what we do at Melbourne Fringe. I feel like, you know, Fringe is about sort of discovery, really. You know, it's about artists trying new things and discovering new things about their practice. It's about audiences finding that next big thing. And it's absolutely about kind of citizens of Melbourne discovering their city in a way they haven't seen it before as well.
Why is the Fringe so important to Melbourne?
It just serves such an important purpose for exactly that reason, about creating a, I guess, a space where audiences are willing to take a risk, and our audiences are so incredibly generous.
Yep.
For a lot of artists, they use it as a way to try out new work before they might take it on tour. And for others, you know, we can get kind of fantastic big audiences. So for others, it's a way to bring it back and play to a great crowd.
It's interesting. David was talking before about the Fringe Festival in Adelaide. How is Melbourne Fringe Festival uniquely Melbourne or different to the Adelaide Fringe Festival?
Yeah, look, they're very different beasts. I mean, there's also a fantastic Fringe in Perth, which has really grown in the last 2 or 3 years. In fact, we, of course, all work together quite closely. In a sense, one of the things that makes Melbourne Fringe different is, you know, we really are about contemporary art practice. Both Perth and Adelaide, they tend to focus, you know, gloriously on circus and cabaret
and comedy.
You know, whereas we have the comedy festival in Melbourne, we have the cabaret festival in Melbourne. So even though we have big components of our program that are made up of, you know, those art forms, for us it is, you know, very much across all art form. You know, we have visual arts, we commission free public art, and we have, you know, really fantastic contemporary theatre work as well.
So we're going to be talking to a few people involved in the festival as we go through the show today. But, you know, give us a bit of a snapshot of some of your highlights.
Ooh, that's a big call. Where do I start? Look, at Gasworks in Albert Park, there's a fantastic circus program.
Right.
So, you know, again, you know, there's the headline show there is a show called Luminous, which is, you know, booking very well, very popular, you know, is a kind of black light body paint circus piece. At the other end of the scale, we have in North Melbourne Town Hall, there's two fantastic shows by a company called The Last Great Hunt, who are pretty much the hottest thing in theatre in WA at the moment. They've got a piece called Fag Stag and a piece which will be quite fantastic.
They're queuing up now.
Queuing up for that one, which won our Melbourne Fringe Touring Award from Perth to bring over here.
What's it about?
It's about a gay guy and his straight best mate.
Oh, that makes sense, doesn't it?
Makes sense. And, you know, gorgeous, really fantastic little show. And they're also presenting another work called Minnie and Mona Play Dead, which has just finished a season at the Brisbane Festival. So, you know, the other end of the scale, we've got, you know, some really weird and wonderful, intimate, gorgeous little works.
Right. Now, it's more about the new you know, the arts in all different shapes and forms.
Yes.
But the really interesting thing now about the Melbourne Fringe Festival is that some fairly well-known people are getting involved, like Yana Ilana, who's going to be on a little bit later on the show. How cool is it that she's part of it?
Look, fantastic. Exactly. We do have some really big names.
Yep.
That's the kind of great thing about Melbourne Fringe, you know, that you have a group of unknown people who you might never have heard of. And then side by side, you have Yana Ilana, Geraldine Quinn is back, Stephen K. Amos, Tony Martin's doing his first stand-up show in about 15 years.
Right.
We've actually had a message in. We don't know who it's from, but they say that they're a big fan of the Fringe Festival and they hope it sends a message to Minister Brandis that art is very important part of our society. So can you, what's the tension like there between, you know, obviously there have been funding cuts.
Well, thank you, anonymous person. You know, obviously I absolutely agree, you know.
It must be hard for a festival that is as big as a Fringe Festival if you're not getting that support with funding.
Well, look, absolutely. You know, look, they're difficult times. You know, I think for us, it's really because we represent independent artists. That's what we're there to do. And it really is the independents who've been hardest hit by these budget cuts that have come through from Senator Brandis and the Abbott government. So organisations haven't been hit in quite the same way. It's really the individuals, it's the little guy that really is suffering. So, you know, we see our job at Melbourne Fringe is to, you know, absolutely profile those independent artists and, you know, try and bring a fantastic big audience in what are really tricky times.
Well, I was reading a bit about last year's attendance. I mean, it looks like the festival managed to do that last year. Attendance was up by about 40%.
That's right.
So quite quite large numbers. How are you planning on sustaining or moving up from there?
Well, it's an interesting question. In fact, the festival itself has grown so significantly over the last few years. This year is at a similar size to last year, which is fantastic. In fact, I think there's one more event, so I can sufficiently say it's the biggest ever, which it is. But
I love the statistics you've got. What is it? It's how
400 events, 6,000 artists playing to 300,000 people over 19 days.
That's huge. That's huge. That's
well and truly the biggest ever.
And you're babysitting them all.
Well, yes. I've just put together the most fantastic spreadsheet that enables me to get to as many shows as possible.
That would have taken days to put together.
It did. It's unfortunately not possible for me to see all 401 shows, but I'm giving it a red hot go.
Good on you. Well, you're hanging around for the whole hour.
I sure am.
And we'll be having other guests coming in. You're on Joy 94.9 at Sunday Arts Magazine.
Joy 94.9.
You're on Joy 94.9 and you're listening to Sunday Arts Magazine.
And, of course, Daniel, we've got the Fringe Festival special today and we've got Mr. Important himself, Simon Abrahams, creative director and CEO. Now, he told me before he went on air, if I didn't mention all those names, he wouldn't speak to us. No, I'm joking.
That is not true. We also have a fantastic kind of hardcore risk management plan where I am the chief warden.
So I
like to be called chief warden at all times.
Now, one of my favourite parts of the Fringe Festival, and I believe it's in its 29th year.
That's right.
And we're talking to Vanessa Wright from Fringe Furniture. Welcome.
Thank you.
Now, what is it? You know, give us a overall view of what Fringe Furniture is.
For sure. So Fringe Furniture is one of the longest running events in the Melbourne Fringe Festival, and it's a design exhibition for emerging and established designers. So it's open access, just like the Melbourne Fringe Festival. Anyone can enter work, and it's a chance for designers to kind of take some risks and experiment with their work. So we have furniture mostly, but we also ask any kind of design, so lighting, jewellery, tableware, anything you can think of really can be entered in Fringe Furniture.
So where do the people come from? Is there a lot of people? Do you have to turn people away?
It's open access, so we don't turn people away.
Oh, okay.
So we have a lot of work this year. Just like the rest of the festival, it's the biggest year ever of Fringe Furniture. So we have over 120 works in total in the exhibition and over 100 artists as well.
That must be hard. Is there ever a time where you get a piece of work submitted and you think, I don't know that this kind of goes?
We have size limitations to make sure that there are a couple of rules,
yeah.
But other than that, we have fantastic event designers who make it look gorgeous.
Absolutely. So there are sometimes you think, how are we going to make that work? But there's always a way to make it work, and that's what we do.
And is it a lot of students who are studying furniture design? Or
It's a really big mix, but this year there are a lot of students. We have a lot of students from RMIT who are exhibiting their work, but also other universities like Swinburne and Monash who are studying either furniture design or industrial design. And it's their kind of opportunity. Sometimes it's their first exhibition that they've ever been in. Sometimes they've got a long list because they're very prolific as well.
29 years is a long time. You must notice kind of waves of kind of trends in what you're seeing submitted. What kind of trends have you noticed?
This is the first year I've been involved with Fringe Furniture, but I think there's definitely trends within the furniture and design industry. And I think last year we had a lot of lighting works in the exhibition, and this year we have a lot of kind of tables and chairs. And so it really kind of depends. I think sometimes people see what other people are doing and then they're like, I want to do something different, but they all have the same idea at the same time.
That's it. One of the exhibitors, in fact, is the guy who started the exhibition 29 years ago. So
wonderful.
Still involved. And one of the things he's told us is it started out very much kind of as weird and wonderful and wacky as you can possibly imagine. Very fringe circa 1986. Mm. And over time, I guess it's become, there's actually, you know, a combination of some very practical furniture pieces you might want to buy and take home, and some impossible lighting ridiculousness.
Right.
And, you know, we kind of love the way that those two things come together.
So you can buy the pieces.
You can, yeah. So it's up to the artist if they want to sell it or not, but there's definitely work that you can buy there. So there's some really beautiful pieces as well.
And having it all together and deciding where it all sits and whatever must be a wonderful challenge for the design people in itself.
Yeah, absolutely. Our exhibition designers are currently slaving away, working, making it all look really beautiful, and it's kind of a fun jigsaw puzzle, I think.
Do you try and tell a story with the furniture, or is it more just aesthetic, art for art's sake?
So the theme for the exhibition this year is Between the Lines, and we're really asking the artist to think about what's implied in their object as well. And part of that is how it's used in a space and the way that people interact with it. So our exhibition designers have really taken that on board, and they've sort of set up kind of little vignettes as a way of showing, telling little stories with the furniture. So putting it in a functional space as well to see how it would be used as not just as an art object, but as a functional furniture piece that you can use.
What's your background? How did you get involved in it?
I have a background in art history and curatorship.
Ah,
it was my university degree
Okay. Many
years ago now. And also have a history in festivals as well. So I've been working in Canberra on a festival there. And yeah, this is my first year with Melbourne Fringe, which is very exciting for
me. So is there awards?
There are awards. Yep. Yeah, we have. There's awards that kind of is a chance for us to really celebrate excellence in the design industry. And we partner with a number of organisations and businesses around Melbourne. So we have an award sponsored by Tate, who is a furniture company in Melbourne, and mm-hmm. they sponsor the Tate Award for Excellence in Design. We also have a Sustainable Design Award sponsored by the Banyule City Council. And we have a Craftsmanship Award. So there's 5 awards and now 6 this year as well. Melbourne Fringe is sponsoring an award this year too.
That must be a growing film, sustainable furniture.
Absolutely. I think sustainability in design is a massive consideration of all designers and artists and makers, and you can definitely see that coming through in the entries that we have in this year. There's a real big theme on sustainability.
So when does it open and where is it?
It opens on Wednesday the 16th,
right.
And it'll be open to the public from Thursday through.
So it's a big launch night. It's actually the festival's opening night.
That's right.
That's correct. And then it'll be open to the public from Thursday the 17th of September through to the 4th of October. Open Wednesday to Sunday, 11 till 5 at the Abbotsford Convent.
Right. Beautiful spot there. Is it that big gallery space underneath? Behind?
No, it's not. We're actually using, that's the C3 Contemporary Gallery, and we're using the Sacred Heart Oratory and Ironing Room. So they're around the Sacred Heart Courtyard, kind of near where Shadow Electric is. And we also have some pop-up exhibition spaces, which when you walk into the Abbotsford Convent, you won't be able to miss them. They're sort of pop-up shipping containers as well, which will be really exciting.
Excellent.
And if we have any visually impaired listeners at home, we also do a fantastic audio-described tactile
Amazing.
Tour. Yeah.
Wow.
That's
so
great.
So there's a chance, you know, it's because accessibility is so key to who we are and what we do. So there's a chance for people to, still have a kind of fantastic tactile tour of the exhibition.
Do you let people interact with the display or...?
For the tactile tours, it's all about interacting with the display. So we're going to have 2 tactile tours, one on the 19th of September and one on the 2nd of October. So you can get in touch with Melbourne Fringe if you'd like to book into that. And it'll be a chance for people to really feel the objects, touch them and interact with them if you're vision impaired.
Do you actually have tours or forums or anything like that as well?
We have artist talks. So we'll have 3 artist talks throughout the festival and throughout the Fringe Furniture Exhibition. So they'll be on Sundays at 3 p.m.
Right. Because that's really important, you know, because a lot of people will look at a piece of furniture and don't know how much time and effort and thought has gone into it.
Absolutely. And I think the artists are really keen for that, for people to know the story behind the work as well. So, and sometimes that really informs how a piece of work is viewed and how you interpret it as well. So it's a really great opportunity for people to discover that.
You were saying this is your first time doing this. Have you heard any stories about the artists being not all that happy? My piece should be up the front. It shouldn't be down the back.
Oh, I think there's always a little bit of that in any exhibition. We definitely had some people sitting on some of the objects last year, which wasn't quite what the artist wanted.
Yeah.
So that was a bit of a problem, but also, you know, that you've got to be considerate.
It's called fringe furniture.
I know, it is a piece
of
furniture.
What do you want?
All right, so it opens on Thursday.
That's right.
And from Wednesday to Sunday, it's open from
11 till 5.
11 till 5. And you can find out about it, of course, from...
at melbournefringe.com.au.
Thank you so much for coming in, and we'll see you down at the convent.
Great, thank you for having me.
You're on Joy 94.9.
Joy!
You're listening to Sunday Arts Magazine on Joy 94.9. And David, the studio is very full right now, isn't it?
It certainly is, because we've got such a superstar in our presence. Of course, we are talking about... Oh, look, she's shaking her head going, oh, no, what's he doing to me?
It's okay, he was talking about Simon. Anyway.
Yeah, because his ego's out of control. So we are talking about Melbourne Fringe Festival, because it starts this week here in Melbourne, which is very exciting. Now, we have got, as I said before, and I'm being honest here, she really is one of the big names here in Melbourne and so well known and so well loved and is an amazing performer. We're talking about Sarah Ward. Hello.
Hi.
You don't know how to take that, do you?
Why did you pouting? You don't like compliments,
do you? No, it's so lovely. I love that you're saying that. It's nice.
Do you get introduced like that? Like, do you sort of go into the supermarket and are people like, it's Sarah Ward?
No, because no one knows who Sarah Ward is. Everyone knows who Yana Alana is.
Yeah, right.
Well, that's what we're here to talk about today as well. I went along to the launch of the Fringe Festival a couple of weeks back, and you hosted it.
Yes.
Well, Yana Alana hosted
it. Yes, yes,
you did. And how exciting was that?
It was pretty fun. It was really fun to introduce all of those ministers and be so naughty. All the speakers, you know.
Because you're a big name here in Melbourne. Your shows sell out and everyone wants to see you and everyone's talking about you when you do a show. And here you are part of a Fringe Festival and you're a headliner.
Well, it's pretty exciting to be in the Fringe. The last time I was in Fringe is 2007.
Oh, wow.
And the show did really well, actually. It's really funny because Yana's going to do this bit of a joke about it, that, you know, 2007 I'm in the ballroom and in 2015 she's in the main space and she's going to say that, you know, she really feels like she's come a long way in that time, about 10 metres. Yeah. So, yeah, so she's going to have a bit of a joke about that.
Right.
But, I mean, it can feel like that in the industry sometimes.
Why now? Why are you coming back now?
Well, we wanted to do a new show. I must say, Between the Cracks has done so well, you know, winning lots of awards and has been booked all over Australia and in New Zealand and, you know, we'll probably go next year onwards to Europe and America.
Oh, really?
Which will be really great.
I was just blown away with that show.
Yeah,
I
it's pretty out there.
I just loved it. So what did you wear in that show?
I wore blue paint.
And nothing
and a
else.
Huge wig and stilettos.
I think
and some fabulous.
And some earrings.
Fabulous, yes. And I can remember seeing you at the opening of, before I saw the show in full, you were at the opening of the Cabaret Festival, Melbourne Cabaret Festival, and you were down in the audience standing on people's chairs.
So I was.
With just
in blue
paint.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, if you're going to do it, you can't go back, can you? You've got to own it. And someone like Yana, she's so unapologetic. So it's really lovely for me to be in the skin of a character that is so brave and courageous and doesn't mind saying what she wants to say. So
how do people respond when you're standing over them in blue paint and nothing else?
Oh, well, it's everything from open mouths to smiles to, you know, turning away. There's lots of different responses and I've had to kind of remind myself that the audience members are human beings and they're allowed to have whatever response they want to have.
Yeah,
I think it's hilarious because this show that you're bringing to the festival now, you're billing as camp, curved and clothed, which I think is so funny.
Yes. Well, finally, you know, Yana Alana covered. She's wearing clothes, singing other people's songs. And there's something so liberating about that, can I just say? You know, getting together with Beck again, she's back in the band, she's out of Circus Oz after 4 years. And
oh, because you, talking about Circus Oz,
yeah,
you toured with Circus
yeah,
Oz.
Yeah, for 2 years.
Right.
Yeah, that's right, as their MC. And then Beck stayed on for another 2 years. She's my partner, but she's also my creative partner. So she's been MDing on this project and we've got together a really wonderful, kooky little group of songs and we're excited because it's a focus on Yana's voice.
Well, I was going to mention that. You would have to have one of the strongest, powerful, so much emotion. Your voice is you forget that you're standing there with nothing on, the last show.
Yeah, that's right.
It's that voice that you're I was just blown away with your voice.
Thank you. And I think it's time. I think it's time to sing, you know. And the theatrics is one thing and it's a lot of fun, but I think I'm ready to do this show. And there's other shows that we've got lined up which have all of that full theatrics and really hard driving politics. But with this show, I suppose the politics comes from the choice of songs.
And can you give us a hint of some, if they're covers, who you're covering?
I think a lot of them you won't really know, actually.
Okay.
So
right.
it's interesting, but some of them you will. Songs sung by Nina Simone, obviously, and Shirley Bassey,
awesome.
Which will be really great. There's one by Kurt Cobain, and there's another one by Johnny Young, actually. So this is where it gets really interesting, and there's another by an artist called Scout Niblett, who's an incredible indie performer in, I think she's in San Francisco, and her song is mind-blowing, and we've done our own version of it. So
how did you find that song?
we were over in San Francisco. We saw her performing live.
Mm-hmm.
And we just thought, that's, I've always loved that song so much. I never thought Yana would sing it, but then, oh, I can't wait to perform it. It's my favourite song.
Right.
And do you think we'll see, will we see an album project come out of this as well for Yana?
I hope so. I'm in contact with APRA on Monday, so.
Good. Is it, what?
We'll see what you see. You know, it's a whole different kettle of fish when you're singing other people's songs.
Exactly.
Yeah. You've got to get permission, for God's sake.
What's the unifying theme that's got, like, why have you chosen these songs?
That's a good question. I suppose the songs are, you know, a continuation of the journey of her problems with her mental health and with, you know, reality, what's real, you know, what's in your head or what's outside. I really love that quote in Harry Potter. I sound like such a nerd now.
Oh, no.
It's the Dumbledore quote.
I'm sorry, that Dumbledore quote. Yeah, that one where he's talking to Harry when they're in that in-between place and he says, is this real or is this just happening in my head? And Dumbledore says, of course it's happening in your head, Harry, but why would that mean it's not real?
Yeah, great.
And I really like playing with that, what's real, what's in my head, you know, and also, I guess, asking people questions about an identity, you know, who am I and what is that based on, and her relationship. There's not going to be a whole lot of arguing or issues with the band this time. I think Yana's actually going to appreciate them, which would be a really big change.
But when Yana explores who she is that Sarah exploring who she is, or?
Yeah, definitely. I think Yana goes wherever I'm going next, you know. She doesn't evolve, but she changes. She can't evolve, so because otherwise we'd lose the clown, we'd lose the fun, you know. Whereas I do. I like to think I do. Maybe some people think I don't, but I like to think I evolve. I do a lot of psychotherapy. I better be. I've spent a lot of money on evolving. But I suppose next I did Between the Cracks, and I just thought, I need to do something which is enriching for me, you know, and therefore it will be for Yana. I need to do something that isn't so exposing. It takes so much energy mentally and physically to get through Between the Cracks. It's a huge ask for me, actually, because of my levels of anxiety and also because of the 2.5 hour preparation and the 1 hour removal, and I can't sit down in that time. So it's actually a really huge show. It might just look like a bit of messy fun, but it's an enormous undertaking. So I wanted to do something where I can turn up half an hour before the gig, I can whack on a fabulous dress, and I can get out there and sing some amazing songs with a band. Mm. I mean, is that selfish?
No. And do you know what? I think,
you know what I mean?
I think audiences just a tad. I think audiences are ready for this now with you.
You've taken them
on such a wonderful journey. Mm. It's lovely to strip it back and do covers. Yeah. And it sounds as if what you're doing is so interesting, the covers you're doing. So, yeah, good on you.
Are you anxious about changing pace like that?
I'm always anxious. I'm anxious when I change pace. I'm anxious if I don't change pace. Okay. I'm anxious when I get on a train, you know.
How anxious was she today? You know, she changed her mind 7 times about what she was going to do today on the show.
Exactly. No, but the thing is, I think if I'm not feeling a bit of trepidation about where I'm heading next, then I'm not creating art. So, you know, I still think, you know, I saw Camille O'Sullivan performing a whole hour of covers, and the choice of covers and the journey she took us on was just astonishing. And she made those songs sound like she'd written them. Mm. And that's where I want to be with Yana. And I think that's, you know, as valid as writing your own material.
Oh absolutely.
So as long as you can create an original experience.
A new interpretation of it.
In many ways, I imagine that's harder because you actually have to overcome the ideas that people have around what it is you're playing.
That's right. And a lot of people have expectations about how those songs are delivered.
Yeah.
So people can find themselves feeling a bit disappointed with certain songs.
Gee, that's quite brave, really.
Mm. But it's what most cabaret artists do. It's actually unusual for cabaret artists to write their own material and get it out there. So in some ways, you know, she's kind of going a bit mainstream, isn't she? Oh!
Well, you actually say mainstream is a new fringe.
Yeah, it's kind of a joke, actually. It's a little bit of a joke what we were talking about before we went on air about fringe festivals starting to become more mainstream festivals. Yeah. But I must say, I will celebrate the fact that the Melbourne Fringe is not there and hopefully won't get there.
Yeah, we're very proud to be, you know, to be Fringe. And, you know, in fact, Melbourne Fringe is older than the Melbourne Festival. A lot of people think of it the other way around.
Yeah.
So, you know, we don't think of ourselves as a fringe to the festival. We think of ourselves as a festival of fringe art.
Wonderful, Simon.
So, Sarah, Yana Ilana is covered at the Hub in North Melbourne.
Mm. I'm so excited to be back at the Lithuanian Club.
Yeah. 29th of September until the 3rd of October.
Yes, it's a very short season, five nights.
So you're going to have to get in and book now, which you can go online at melbournefringe.com.au.
You've done your research.
I've done my research.
You didn't even look down at the paper.
I didn't, but... Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Can't wait to see the show. And
great.
Congratulations on the most amazing career that you've already had so far.
Thank you. That means the world. Have a lovely afternoon.
Thank you. Now, just finishing off, Simon, we've talked about the hub, but there's another part of the Fringe Festival, isn't there, where people can get together?
Yeah, that's right. So a big part of the Fringe is the Fringe Club. So, you know, it starts, we open sort of the club at 6 o'clock or so, but really it's about 9:30, 10. So it's once Sarah has finished as Yana, you can then head on down to next door to the North Melbourne Town Hall, where we have, you know, every night of the week, huge kind of performance events from... we have Bron Batten, who you may know from the last Tuesday Society.
Yeah.
She's curating an event called The Dad Show, which is performers and their dads performing live on stage.
I love it.
She may have twisted me to appear, and I may have twisted my dad's arm. So I do recommend The Dad Show, which will be very fun. We have an event called The Side Part, which is a weird live art participatory event. And then we have, you know, events like Geraldine Quinn doing a David Bowie night. We have 1992-10, when we will have everyone dressed up in their 90s gear for a big 90s party.
I love 90s gear. I want to know if you're going to be wearing a matching outfit to your father when you're performing.
Oh, we haven't talked outfits. Like it's a disgrace.
I was thinking tracksuits.
Matching
tracksuits.
And, of course, Colt.
And Cults, which is it's by the curators of Northside Story. So last year's kind of smash hit that then did a return season at Midsummer. So they're back to do a kind of fantastic queer mashup of your favourite cult films live on stage.
Fantastic. So excited. It's all happening this week from Thursday. The launch is on Wednesday night. And then Thursday, get online right now or come into Joy, because we've got these amazing booklets that you can take away. Because a lot of people still like to flip through, but otherwise... go online. What is it?
It's at the website, melbournefringe.com.au. And there's these fantastic red brochure guides there at the Fed Square Visitor Centre, Cafes Old Town, or here in the Joy Studios.
Yeah, and if we run out, we'll just run down and get them off you because you're in the same building. Thank you so much for coming in.
My absolute pleasure.
And you are on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Touch me, baby. Touch me, baby, tainted love. Touch me, baby, tainted love.
Oh, yes, that's a little bit of tainted love done with a real twist, of course it would be. That is Ali McGregor, who is a very well-known cabaret artist and comedian and opera singer. She's amazing. Have you ever seen her, Daniel?
I haven't, no.
Oh, she's an incredible performer. So, you know, we spoke to her a few months ago now about a children's show that she was doing, as well as everything else. She goes to the Edinburgh Festival every year as well, and kicks ass, her and her husband, so it's good.
Well, it's the end of another Sunday Arts magazine.
You can find more Joycast and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.